From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A warning from Doctors Without Borders over Saudi Arabia's blockade of Yemen. Press TV's Kanish Fatima has more.
An international medical humanitarian organization says that the Saudi blockade of Yemen is killing as many civilians as the country's war. The head of the Doctors Without Borders group said many people are dying because of Riyadh's prevention of medicine from reaching the sick. Zhuan Liu said Riyadh needs to put in place ways to get supplies to come in a safe way. It was the latest warning about the dire humanitarian situation in Yemen 4 months after Saudi Arabia began bombing the impoverished Arab country. Riyadh has imposed a unilateral aerial and naval blockade on Yemen amid its deadly airstrikes. Last month, the United Nations Security Council urged Saudi Arabia to lift its blockade, stressing that the ships carrying food, fuel, and other vital supplies must be permitted to enter ports in Yemen, which is on the brink of famine.
A plan to reach a political solution to end the conflict in Syria has been outlined by the United Nations. Senior UN officials briefed the Security Council Wednesday on a proposal which they said all parties support. At least 250,000 people have been killed in the fighting in Syria over the past 4 years. Maria Carlino filed this report from the United Nations.
The threat to international peace and security caused by the war in Syria should compel the global community to consider what more it can do to end the carnage, the UN Secretary General told the Security Council on Wednesday. Ban Ki-moon asked his special envoy on Syria, Stefan de Mistura, to intensify efforts over the past several months to find a political settlement to the conflict. Mr. de Mistura has been working to promote the Geneva Communique, a set of guidelines to end the violence and launch a Syria-led political process. The UN chief said both Syrians and external actors reject a future Syria divided along sectarian lines.
Many Syrians warned that the country is entering a cycle of fragmentation and radicalization from which it will be hard to exist. Our Syrian interlocutors also lamented that their country is caught in a regional proxy war that is beyond the Syrians' ability to resolve by themselves. Almost all pointed to an urgent need for the international community to act now if we want to save and preserve what is left of Syria.
Mr. Ban added that his special envoy for the country will present a proposal to enable Syrians to negotiate an agreement on how to implement all aspects of the Geneva Communique. It will include how to effectively fight terrorism. Maria Carlino, United Nations.
That news was followed by reports Thursday of the capture of a commander of a group of Syrian fighters trained by the United States, and yet another blow to the Pentagon's attempts to train and field the successful proxy army of so-called moderate rebels. According to the New York Times, he was captured by a local al-Qaeda affiliate. At least 6 people were stabbed at an LGBT pride parade in Jerusalem Thursday. According to local media reports, the suspect, an ultra-Orthodox Jew, has been arrested. Meanwhile, a far-right activist in Sweden organized a gay pride march through a predominantly Muslim neighborhood. The move was condemned as provocative by Swedish LGBT activists who organized a counter-demonstration to protest what they called an appropriation of their cause for the sake of xenophobia. RT's Polly Boyko was there and filed this report from Stockholm.
Well, they've got rainbow flags and cowboy hats, but this march isn't part of Stockholm's official Gay Pride Week. It's been organized by a man who runs a website here in Sweden that some in the mainstream say is far right and xenophobic. So they're taking this Gay Pride march through a predominantly Muslim neighborhood here in Stockholm. And there are fears that it could stoke tensions between some of the local residents and the people demonstrating here. So we are coming along for the ride.
And this is done in the same spirit as the traditional Pride festival. And someone else should have done this. The LGBT establishment should have done it. Instead of that, they are accusing me for provocation and going into Muslim areas.
This is an area that's seen its fair share of social unrest in recent times. There were riots here last summer, and there are concerns that some of the many young people who live here could play into the hands of the organizers of this event. got people who are angry with what's taking place right over there.
People who organize that is the Swedish Democrats. So it's like, I think, two ways provocative.
What's the provocative nature of this event that's got so many people angry? The idea of taking the rainbow flag and placing it in the middle of a predominantly Muslim area and causing a bit of chaos. Some people here say that it's a PR stunt aimed at dividing communities.
Not everyone is ready for this yet, but we want at least to try to show them that this is fully normal and that love can be universal.
Well, just a few hundred meters from where the unofficial gay pride parade took place, there's a much larger counter demonstration. A lot of people here angry about the provocative nature of the march that took place in these neighborhoods.
Some racists, a neo-Nazi organization, were starting an LGBTQ march through our neighborhoods to what they thought was prove that Muslims would be provoked.
And really what it's boiled down to is a question of politics, because all the people I've spoken today at both of these events have said that they want to celebrate LGBT rights, but they're coming at it from two very different sides of the political spectrum. Reporting from Husby in Stockholm, I'm Polly Boyko for RT.
A divided Security Council Wednesday failed to pass a resolution which would have established a UN tribunal to prosecute those responsible for the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 on July 17th of last year en route to Kuala Lumpur from Amsterdam, killing all 290 people aboard. An investigation by the Dutch Safety Board claimed that the plane was hit by a large number of what it called high-energy objects penetrating the aircraft from the outside. Although 11 of the council's 15 current members voted in favor of establishing the tribunal, the one no vote was cast by one of the five permanent members, the Russian Federation, constituting a veto of the measure. Russia was joined in its opposition to the proposal by another permanent member, China, as well as Venezuela, representing Latin America, and Angola, representing Africa. Those three abstained. Stephanie Kutrix filed this report from the United Nations.
11 nations of the 15-member council voted in favor of a tribunal which would build upon current investigative efforts. But Angola, China, and Venezuela abstained, while the Russian Federation voted against it. A two-thirds majority is needed for a resolution to be adopted by the Security Council, as long as no permanent member of the UN body uses its power of veto, which includes Russia. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
The resolution was introduced by Malaysia's transportation minister, Liao Tieng Lai, who expressed disappointment after the vote.
Mr. President, Malaysia deeply regret the failure of the Security Council to maintain unity on the downing of the Malaysia Airlines flight MH17. We are deeply disappointed at the failure to adopt the draft resolution to establish an ad hoc international criminal tribunal for MH17, despite our persistent effort to address council members' concern and to bridge our differences. Malaysia, together with the countries participating in a joint investigation team, had wanted to pursue this option since it would have generated broad international support for the prosecution process. It was also the best way for ensuring the cooperation of all nations for an effective prosecution mechanism to ensure justice and accountability. Unfortunately, 1 year on since the unanimous adoption of the Security Council Resolution 2166, the Council is now taking a step back by sending the wrong signal to the victims' family and loved ones. The Council has also failed to implement Resolution 2166, which demanded that those responsible be held to account and that all states cooperate fully with efforts to establish accountability. Instead of conveying the message in support of justice and accountability, we are sending a dangerous message of impunity to the perpetrator of this heinous crime, as well as jeopardizing the safety of civil aviation over conflict zone in the future. I wish to stress that Malaysia will not be deterred by today's unfortunate event. We'll remain steadfast in our determination to pursue accountability for the perpetrator and to ensure justice for all the innocent victims on board of the ill-fated plane. I wish to sincerely thank all the countries that have supported Malaysia and the countries participating in the JIT in our endeavour to establish an international criminal tribunal for MH17. Moving forward, we'll continue with our outreach effort and consultation with the relevant countries to address any concern that they might have to pursuit of justice and accountability for MH17. Malaysia will also consider and explore other viable options and prosecuting mechanism in views of today's setback. Rest assured that we will not stop here and we will never give up. We have to do something. Doing nothing is not an option. And we must now move forward with a renewed sense of purpose to ensure that we are able to demand justice. We owe it to the families of the loved ones or the victims to soldier on in our quest for justice and accountability. Thank you.
Vitaly Churkin, Russia's permanent representative to the UN, explained his country's problems with the resolution as drafted, as well as with the secretive nature of the investigation being conducted, which has kept his country completely out while allowing Ukraine to participate.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. President. Well, we'd like to start by again extending our condolences to the families of the deceased, as well as the governments of those countries whose citizens were on board the flight which crashed in Ukraine on 17th of July of last year. Russia has consistently advocated the rapid determination of reasons for the crash of MH17 and the bringing of the guilty of this tragedy to justice. Furthermore, we have repeatedly promoted the achievement of just these objectives through concrete action. The Russian delegation has done everything in its power to ensure that the Security Council, as rapidly as is possible, adopted Resolution 2166. In its preparation, we insisted on including provisions regarding the necessity to conduct a comprehensive, in-depth international investigation in keeping with guiding principles of international civil aviation, with a leading role played by ICAO. Furthermore, we were open to the immediate adoption of yet a further resolution, one which would ensure the rapid access to the crash area to the JIT. However, interested states preferred to act outside the Security Council and on the basis of bilateral agreements with Ukraine, whose elaboration took additional time. In Resolution 2166, we insisted on the inclusion in the text of provisions regarding the immediate cessation of all military activities in the area directly adjacent to the crash site. It is the Russian Federation which, at the Security Council, raised the issue of the violation by Kiev of this provision back in August, when the Ukrainian authorities unilaterally declared that they were ending the ceasefire agreement, as a result of which the JIT was forced to suspend its work for a lengthy period of time. Within the framework of the technical investigation, Russian experts, pursuant to Annex 13 to the Convention on International Civil Aviation, transferred to the Dutch side all information which was requested from us, including radar station data of the Rostov Center of Air Traffic Control System. Following a few days after the disaster, the Russian Ministry of Defense conducted a briefing on which it fully disseminated all Russian satellite data. They were also sent to the Dutch side. Its analysis and their calculations regarding one of the versions of the disaster, namely that the flight was shot down by an air-ground Buk-type missile, was sent to the Netherlands by the experts of the Russian manufacturing enterprise Almaz-Antey. To do this, the secrecy seal on the data of the technical characteristics of such missiles was lifted. Russia was the only country which has made public such data. Unfortunately, following a year after the adoption of Resolution 2166, serious issues remain regarding how the investigation is being conducted. Russian experts were not provided equal access to the various elements of the technical investigation. They unilaterally provide their calculations and their expertise, but remain in the dark regarding what happens further with this information. We have proposed to provide qualified experts and equipment to conduct complex work, for example, metallurgical analysis, which would have enabled us to, on the basis of analysis of pieces of wreckage, to determine the type of missile which brought down the plane. All of this remained unanswered. Turning now to criminal prosecution. Well, it is carried out by the members of the GIT in a closed fashion. It was said that an agreement was reached between five sides on not disseminating information. In this case, what are the grounds to be assured of the impartiality of such an investigation? Can this investigation resist the aggressive propaganda backdrop in the media? Can it resist pressure of clear political origin when the causes and the disasters of and those who are guilty of this disaster are named in advance, and such statements are made by a number of leaders of certain states which form part of the JIT. The Russian Federation was the only country which recalled that Resolution 2166 provided for comprehensive assistance to be brought to the investigation by the United Nations. We propose to consider the creation of the post of an SRSG, which would have promoted genuine international and transparent investigations. However, this proposal of ours was not accepted. What was also unfulfilled was the instruction to the Secretary General, pursuant to Security Council Resolution 2166, to submit to the Security Council for consideration a comprehensive set of options for assistance to be brought by the United Nations for the investigations. What did we receive instead? Well, something which was summarily prepared outside the Security Council without careful consideration of the various options for a criminal prosecution. Well, we had a security draft of the Security Council resolution under Chapter 7. Our position that this is premature, it hasn't been elaborated carefully, it was something which went unheeded. We came up with an alternative draft resolution for the Security Council of the United Nations aimed at ensuring that we fully harness the potential of Resolution 2166 and to ensure a genuine international independent nature for the investigation. After having achieved this objective, we could have revisited the issue of considering the legal mechanisms for bringing those guilty to justice. We would like to underscore that the document annexed by us remains on the table. What is contained in it, the proposals, the ideas, are ones which we continue to deem topical. We have repeatedly stated that we do not back the idea of the creation of a tribunal under Chapter 7 of the UN. There are no grounds for this, mindful of the fact that the Security Council in Resolution 2166 did not classify the Boeing tragedy as a threat to international peace and security. It is difficult to explain how the events which took place, which a year ago were not deemed to be a threat to international peace and security, now all of a sudden have become just that. In principle, issues of organizing judicial prosecutions does not fall within the remit of the Security Council. There were very well-known exceptions regarding determining those who were guilty for mass crimes, which were deemed by the international community to be the most severe ones. However, the experience of the former tribunals for Yugoslavia and Rwanda cannot be considered to be positive, mindful of the fact that they were very expensive, that they took a long time to carry out the work, that they were subject to political pressure, and so forth. The precedent of the creation of international tribunals by the Council to bring to justice those who are responsible for disasters to transport means are not known in principles. This is something which also happened in Russia, of course. In 2001, a Sibir plane, was shot down over Black Sea by the Ukrainian anti-aircraft missiles. There was also the Iran Air plane, which was brought down in 1988 over the Gulf by a missile which was shot from an American destroyer. The national investigations which were carried out back then in Ukraine and the United States of America did not determine that a crime had been carried out. But the Security Council Resolution 616, adopted following the death and shooting down of the Iranian airliner, was not qualified as a threat to international peace and security. Another example, in 2010, Russia came up with an initiative on creating a special international tribunal to prosecute pirates. We were prompted to do this by the unprecedented growth in the number of pirate attacks off the coast of Somalia. Effective mechanisms for the prosecution of pirates didn't exist back then. Those who were caught on the seas were very often simply released. In this, the idea of an international tribunal on pirates did not enjoy support within the Security Council, despite the fact that the classification of the situation as one which threatens international peace and security was quite clear. Arguments regarding the lack of efficiency and the fact that such mechanisms were difficult to implement were then heard as main arguments, especially from those who now back the draft on the Boeing. In such a way, we're forced to note that the draft, which was submitted for voting today, was deprived of any legal basis or any precedent. We have repeatedly explained this to our colleagues and we called upon them to consider alternatives. However, the sponsors of the draft refused to act in spirit of cooperation, submitted it for a vote, knowing in advance that this would not lead to a positive result. This, in our view, indicates the fact that political purposes were more important for them than practical objectives. This, of course, is regrettable. Mr. President, by way of conclusion, I would like to underscore that Russia stands ready to cooperate in the conduct of a full, independent, and objective investigation of the reasons and circumstances of the crash of the Malaysian airliner, based on the provisions of Resolution 2166, to identify those guilty and to punish them. The position which we have adopted today has nothing in common with promoting impunity. I thank you, sir.
In explaining his country's abstention, China's permanent representative, Liu Zhiyi, echoed Ambassador Churkin's concerns with the propriety of setting up a UN tribunal in a criminal case and also raising questions about the objectivity of the current investigation.
Mr. President, a year ago, Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 crashed in eastern Ukraine, causing the loss of lives of 298 people aboard. That was a tragedy. China is deeply saddened by this tragedy and wishes to once again express its sympathies to the bereaved families of the victims and to the relevant countries. We support, in accordance with the Security Council Resolution 2166, holding an objective, impartial, and independent international investigation into the incident and bring the perpetrators to justice. The current focus should be on establishing the truth of the incident and seeking justice for the victims. China understands the feelings of the sponsors of the draft resolution, and in particular, the bereaved families of the victims of the crash of MH17, as well as their urgent desire for punishing the perpetrators. China has participated in the consultations on the draft resolution, and China has all along called on the members of the Council to maintain unity, meet each other halfway, accommodate each other's concerns, and avoid political confrontation. If the Security Council could have reached consensus on the next step to be taken concerning the incident of a crash of MH17, it would have been able to send out a positive signal that the international community were maintaining a common position on this issue. It will also help establish the truth of the incident as soon as possible. Under the circumstances where some member states of the Council still have major concerns on the draft resolution, to forcibly push for a vote will only result in the division among the member states of the Council. This will not help ease the grief of the bereaved families of the victims of the crash of MH17, nor will it help establish the facts and bring the perpetrators to justice. Based on the above, China abstained in the vote on the draft resolution. Thank you.
Ukraine's Foreign Minister Pavlo Klimkin repeated Kiev's charges of Russia's involvement in the downing of the plane, again offering no evidence to support that position.
I would like to make several points crystal clear. The Security Council Resolution 2166 establish an obligation for the states to cooperate fully in the course of investigation of this tragedy and to bring those responsible to justice. Use of sophisticated and powerful weapon against the civilian aircraft constitutes the threat to the international civil aviation and to the international peace and security in general. The only effective way to prevent such acts in the future is to punish those responsible without delay. It's indeed the issue for the Security Council to deal with under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter. The level of support for our draft resolution has gained clearly and shows that we are on the right track. Our aim here is to create effective, transparent, unbiased, and independent vehicle to bring to justice those responsible for the crime. It's about individual criminal responsibility of the murderers, and it's not about politics. That's why it's particularly disappointing that one country, exactly Russia, still makes those two completely separate issues: its responsibility for aggression against Ukraine and continuous support of terrorism on the one hand, and individual responsibility of the perpetrators of the MH17 tragedy on the other.
But Russia's permanent representative challenged the Ukrainian foreign minister's claims and leveled some charges of his own.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I'm going to be very brief. Today's meeting was a very emotional one, and this is understandable. Sometimes the question arose, are there any limits to the political exploitation of the feelings of the families of those who perished and who are living a living horror? A number of accusations leveled against the Russian Federation are ones which I consider to be insulting and not worthy of diplomats. Turning now to the substance of the issues. We have stated our arguments during our statement. I'll only touch on one issue, on the outcome of the discussions. It's simply not understandable why the lack of understanding on one form of judicial proceedings is being equaled to impunity. We proposed, and we reaffirmed the proposal, to study, consider various formats for judicial proceedings. Amongst them, there are simpler ones, which are more effective, more appropriate, and certainly less politicized. And these are the ones which we should focus on. Now, regarding the statement of the Foreign Minister of Ukraine, Mr. Klinkin. Mr. Klinkin attempted to come up from a moral and religious position of superiority. He referred to the unacceptable of impunity, the necessity to cooperate. I have only two questions addressed to the Ukrainian minister. Why are civilian airlines, or why were civilian airlines, sent to areas where military activities were underway? Areas where the Ukrainian forces are fighting using military aircraft. Why? Why did they send civilian airlines through that airspace? The passengers of the Malaysian airliner might not have known that the conflict was there. They simply couldn't know that a military conflict was underway there. But you knew it. You did knew it. Why did you do this? Did you do this? For what reasons did you do this? Why have you thus far not provided the recordings of your air dispatchers, your military air dispatchers? Well, there is your impunity. Did you punish anyone for this, Mr. Klinin? Did you punish anyone in Ukraine for this? Well, we hope that the investigation will shed light both on this and impunity, or rather, we will also punish those who sent the aircraft into an area of military operations and those who shot it down. And finally, this tragedy of the Malaysian airline, of course, is something terrible, not only for the countries and the citizens who died in this catastrophe, but it's also a trial for the diplomats who are forced to deal with this. It's also for the politicians of the relevant countries, for the experts, for the specialists who are working on this and continue to work together on this. This is a path which we need to travel together. Unfortunately, today's meeting is most unlikely to promote this joint movement towards the final objective, to shed light on all of the circumstances regarding this tragedy and bring those responsible to justice in Russia. Or rather, Russia is ready to resume this work, both at an expert, diplomatic, and any other level. So let us, from tomorrow, move forward with this type of work. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.